You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
You're on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
I was thinking of calling this episode Bitch Slap, but that phrase would surely have gotten it censored everywhere. Podcast syndication, social media, etc. You would not be listening to it right now had I called it that. Such is the devolution of our society. Pretty soon we'll all be speaking in pig Latin or sending smoke signals so we can say what we mean without being silenced. What am I saying? We're already there and have been for several years. People making social media posts using codes and numerical symbols to form verboten words and evade the censoring algorithms and fact-checking puke bags. Each week after I record a new episode, I post it on Twitter and Instagram and No Agenda Social and Facebook. But last week, my Facebook account was locked. Why? Well, some time ago, months ago, I commented that San Francisco, or as I spelled it, San Francisco, should be nuked. Facebook informed me that comment constituted a threat of violence, and they would be hiding that comment, and if I didn't watch my step, they'd take further action to school me. Ooh. Because I am a nuclear power and have a hydrogen bomb in my hall closet, strapped to an intercontinental ballistic missile, which can deliver that bomb. This is really ironic. Ironic when Joey Biden taunts Vlad Putin, calling him a butcher who must be deposed. A guy who really does have nukes in his hall closet. 6,000 of them, the military experts say. But you can find Joey's threats against Putin all over Facebook. Quick sidebar in that situation. People say many things about Vlad Putin. Some may be true, some may not. However, this is a stone fact. Vlad Putin is not stupid, not even a little. He's a very intelligent guy. Which is a good thing, because Vlad is smart enough to know that Joey is a gibbering, soup-brained imbecile. And so he laughs off Joey's moronic rants and insults as the claptrap of a half-wit. Watching Joey spew threats is like watching some toothless, arthritic chihuahua barking at a Rottweiler. It's funny. Until you realize that our soldiers and sailors may have to back up that geezer's threats. And it's not so funny. The Twitterverse, which would be more accurately named the Shitheadverse, is on fire because of the big incident at the Oscars. Thespian Will Smith slapping comic Chris Rock. If they were both fry cooks or dental hygienists or UPS drivers, no one would have known or given a shit. Which is nutty because we all need fry cooks and dental hygienists and UPS drivers. Nobody needs Hollywood actors. Nobody needs comedians either. The world got along just fine for thousands of years without them. Yeah, there were jesters in the Middle Ages, and Greek theater goes way back, but even then, they were non-essential amusements for the monarchs. The funniest guys I've known, and probably you as well, were never on TV or filled a theater. But thanks to YouTube and the internet, we have discovered that John Q. Public can be far more entertaining than anything the studios or networks can throw at us. Which is why the Oscars should maybe be renamed the 8-tracks or the landlines or the newspapers. Movies are the traditional iteration of them. They spend a shit pile of money to make them, distribute the crap at bricks and mortar theaters for people to see. Well, that business model is pretty much over. In Los Angeles, the heart of the movie industry, theaters are closing faster than pop-up COVID testing stations. Soon they'll be a novelty, like drive-in movies. Oh, and the Academy. What a perfect name for a bullshit organization pushing an irrelevant product. That's also going the way of Blockbuster video stores. In 2014, about 44 million people watched the Oscars. Last year, 10.5 million. So, of course, people are slapping each other on stage. It's surprising Will and Chris didn't blow each other after the slapping. That's how desperate the situation has become. But then, online porn viewership dwarfs that of Hollywood movies, so that would have been pointless. Maybe if they doused each other with high-test gasoline and lit up like Buddhist monks. But hell no, those videos are available for your revulsion at any time as well. It appears Hollywood has hit the wall. Or to put it in their own parlance, jump the shark. In case you're unfamiliar with the etymology of that phrase, it refers to the massive TV hit from the 70s, Happy Days. It was monstrously successful, but after a while, it ran out of steam, as all shows do. They did an episode where Fonzie, clad in his leather motorcycle jacket, water skis over a bloodthirsty shark. Where do you go from there? But just to give a thumbnail of how television viewership has declined, Happy Days, a goofy sitcom, regularly delivered ratings as high as 30% of America watched the show. Back then, the U.S. population was around 220 million, so some 66 million people carved out a half hour from their lives each week to watch a silly sitcom. Even then, though, they preferred the Fonz to the Phonies and Gold Statuettes by some 20 million viewers. Happy Days beat the Oscars year after year. The Happy Days Oscar audience comparisons really illuminate something much more fascinating about the decline of America. The show was set in Milwaukee in the mid-1950s, and it debuted in 74. So let's call it, at that time, a 20-year nostalgia trip. Gary Marshall, who created the show, was a pretty smart guy. He was tapping into a feeling, even then, 48 years ago, that America's happy days, its best days, were behind it. Marshall wasn't the only one to read the zeitgeist, so did George Lucas with American Graffiti, and whoever was behind Grease. By 1974, the moon landing was already 5 years stale. That lunar visit was maybe America's shark jump. Moon visits became common. People were blasé about them. Nobody was talking about even trying for Mars. Nixon, he would soon resign amid the Watergate scandal, which in retrospect was chicken shit compared to the peccadilloes of his White House successors. At the time of Happy Days' premiere, the body bags were still coming back from Vietnam, and the nation was losing its first war. Once Nixon resigned, he'd be replaced by a bumbling former model named Gerry Ford, whose answer to the near hyperinflation was to have everyone wear WIN buttons that stood for Whip Inflation Now. Yeah. That was Gerry's plan to restore a busted economy to equilibrium. Just wear a fucking lapel button. That'll reduce prices and interest rates and make everything okay again. After Gerry came Jimmy Carter, the peanut farmer who was an absolute shit show. The Ayatollah Khomeini held a bunch of Americans hostage in Iran just to embarrass Carter, who was an obvious weakling. But then he released them the moment Reagan came to power, a dude who was not a weakling. But back to Gary Marshall and Happy Days. Marshall figured out that the American public knew the nation was on greased skids to hell, and people wanted something light and optimistic and not political. So a weekly look in the rearview mirror back two decades was the right prescription. Did that mirror sugarcoat and airbrush the past? Well, of course. But the fact was, In the 1950s, America's best days were still ahead. And the nation would peak somewhere in the 1960s, maybe with that moon landing, to begin its devolution into the colossally fucked up place it is today. Still probably the best nation on the planet, but that winning margin gets thinner by the day. Hell, maybe it's gone. Some world traveler might know better than I. What if Gary Marshall was resurrected 20 years from now and wanted to repeat his entertainment success by rebooting and freshening the show? How would that work? How would the show depict the 2020s? Maybe the Fonz would work for the TSA and crack wise as he groped cripples and grannies at the Milwaukee airport for their safety. He'd have to trade his fossil-fueled motorcycle for an earth-friendly recumbent bike with a whippy pole so he could display his support for whatever commie issue was trending on Twitter. Instead of a leather jacket, Fonzie might wear a Kevlar one because Milwaukee, once a friendly, safe city of taverns and breweries, is now one of the most dangerous places in America. The Cunningham nuclear family, well, that would have to be reconfigured. Mom and Dad would be divorced. Maybe Richie and little sister Joni would have two dads, or two moms, or both. Everyone would be inked up. Nose and nipple rings all around. Either Richie or Joni would have to be gay or trans, which would open up a bunch of storylines for dates. When Joni leaves for school without her lunch, Mom runs after her with a bag and reminds her to be sure to take her hormone blockers. Instead of slapping jukeboxes and snapping his fingers at chicks, Fonzie would mostly apologize to women for being male and straight. Would they tiptoe around the season of riots, murder, and destruction, or celebrate them as the crucible that forged a new America? Will everyone be masked and vaxxed? Would it be a sitcom or a horror show? As mendacious as Hollywood is, would they dare call it happy days? Maybe ugly days or weird days, sad days, pathetic days. How about final days? But back to that ridiculous dust-up between Chris Rock and Will Smith. Everyone is praising Rock for his quick recovery and unflappable performance. And that was quite amazing and professional and commendable. But it would have been more impressive if he kicked Smith right in his mangina. Or maybe told him, "Hey, Willie, you jug-eared jackhole, the sucker punch was on the house. Let's meet in the parking lot after the show, and I'll kick a fresh hole in your candy ass." That might have been better. Actors are a lot like politicians. They get paid to pretend. Some of them ascend to great heights by simply sucking the right dicks. Just ask Harvey Weinstein. Despite that, their egos inflate like the Goodyear blimp. Take De Niro, for example. He's played so many tough guys in movies, he's convinced that he is a tough guy. Seems he's forgotten that when punches are flying, it's his stuntman that's ducking them. De Niro said he wanted to, quote, "punch Trump in his fucking face." Okay, but Bobby might need a step stool to reach Trump's face. Struggling actors have a hellacious time. The rejection is brutal. Most of them wind up waiting tables or selling real estate. But the ones who achieve Smith's level, well, they live like rajahs. Apparatchiks and personal assistants and armies of sycophants kissing their asses and telling them how great they are. But are they? They sit around on a set all day or in a plush trailer waiting for their call, while the real magic of lighting and sound and sets and cinematography happens. Stand-ins endure the heat or cold or rain while the crew sets up shots and lighting. Fight scene or pratfall? Bring in the stuntman. Finally, the star emerges from his trailer and takes his mark does a line or two of dialogue. And when he recites that line, somebody else wrote it. And who's to say whether the line was read well or not? There is no empirical way to judge. It's simply a matter of opinion. Contrast that with, say, rock stars. All of them work their way up from nowhere, playing shitholes and dive bars and proms and backyard barbecues. When they finally get a record deal, the companies ratfuck them financially. Even if they become superstars, they still have to tour, and most importantly, they have to sound good. If a musician hits a clinker, or the vocalist's voice cracks, or flats, or sharps, everybody knows. They cannot do another take, or fix it in post, as in the movies. Aside from a few auto-tuned divas, music stars must deliver the goods night after night. Then you have comedians like Chris Rock. He started from nowhere, worked endless open mic nights and dumps until he built a following and a reputation. And even if he'd wanted to, there was no producer or agent's ass he could have kissed that would have made him funny. He has to write his own material. Hone his delivery to a razor edge, time it, read the room, maybe adjust on the fly. Comedian Chris Rock starred in several big movies, same as Smith. Could Smith do stand-up and get laughs like Rock does? If he could, he probably would, so he can't and he doesn't. But then again, it's still possible the entire event was staged. Lots of cues that it was, which have been parsed to death since it happened. But in the grand scheme of things, an utterly meaningless event. So is nostalgia as an entertainment format dead? Maybe. They had that 70s show. I never watched it. VH1 used to do the I Love the 80s and the 90s things. It seems as if 20 years is the required interval between the now and the good old days. Regular listeners know that my favorite psycho killer was Charles Manson. I've spoken about him many times, quoted some of his more amusing lunatic statements. I like him so much, I devoted episode 54, Charles Manson and Me, to old Chuck. It's one of the most downloaded ever, with actual clips of Charlie's song Styling by a Campfire in the Desert. You'll find it in the November 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. Check it out, if you dare. As crazy as he was, Charlie favored some phrases that were kind of smart. One of them was, "Come into the now." He used it when playing therapist and surrogate daddy to many of the waifs he picked up, but it's really good advice for anybody. Some people spend their lives looking in the rearview mirror. It's kind of a waste. As shitty as current times might be, they could always get worse. Maybe Carly Simon was right. These are the good old days. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by the show page for hundreds of other episodes. Click a subscribe button while you're there. And if you want to help me keep the lights on and fight commies, click the PayPal or Patreon buttons. Or there's a post office box if you prefer to donate that way. Wherever you download, leave me a 5-star review. Helps the show grow. Now, between episodes, you can follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and No Agenda Social, and you'll find links to all of those also on the show page at thatlarryshow.com. Write to me. The address is thatlarryshow@gmail.com. I get a lot of email, and I don't always answer right away, but I do always answer. Unlike those other shows, I'm solo in every way. I have no artists, no engineers, no writers, no editors, no social media managers, and no partners. So, things take a little longer. My friends, I'm overdue for an episode where I thank, by name or pseudonym, everyone who supports this show. Every donation, every email, every comment on social media is not only appreciated, it's a thrill for me. Thank you. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no slaps and take no shit.